Hello, I wanted to take a moment to thank you for listening, and also to explain why you might hear ads like this before, during, or even after an episode. We're a small but mighty team here at Realm, and to help fund our shows, we promote products or services that we think you'd enjoy from a variety of sponsors. If any of our ads interest you, one of the best ways to support us is by visiting the link or using the promo code in the ad. It's pretty much a win-win since you can get some great deals and we can keep making awesome shows like this one. You can also visit realm.fm/partners for more information about our sponsors and how to access the different promotions. Thanks again for joining us in our corner of the universe. Listen away.
Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Well, wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Welcome to this spoiler review of season 2, episode 6 of Loki from the
Geek
Buddies. Hey! What a finale we have on tap for us to discuss today. Glorious purpose. I mean, literally, each word of that can be applied to this incredible season finale, at least in my opinion, incredible season finale of season 2 of Loki. We're going to break this whole thing down. This is a spoiler review, so if you haven't seen the episode, certainly go and watch the episode. Come on back and join us. Before we get into it, we should introduce ourselves. I am the Outlaw John Rogan, writer, producer, and host here on The Geek Buddies.
I am Michael Vogel, a writer and producer of animated TV shows and movies.
And this is Shannon McClung. I'm a television actor and an animation writer, and as the SAG after strike is pretty much done. Hopefully we might be able to talk about some new credits soon. Fingers crossed.
And of course, if you're watching this as we're recording it, it is Veterans Day. So happy Veterans Day to all of you who are watching us, who have served us, served our country, or had family members who served. We honor them and respect them with all of our hearts. So just want to put that out there before we go forward. All right, gentlemen, glorious purpose. This is the finale of season 2. Everything we've been building to has led to this moment and this ending, which was incredible. So much to talk about in this episode. I'm going to ask you guys general overall thoughts, and then just to let people know as you're watching or listening to us, and then I'm going to run down the events of the episode really quickly, and then we're just going to discuss all the stuff. So, Michael, I start with you as I do every one of these reviews. Your overall thoughts on this season finale, Glorious Purpose?
Well, 3 weeks ago, I thought Victor Timely was Kaiser Soze-ing us. 2 weeks ago, I thought that Loki was going to be caught in an Ouroboros where he was the one who founded the TVA and then ultimately destroyed the TVA.
Yeah.
And when I turned on Disney Plus to watch this episode and saw that the title was Glorious Purpose, which is also the title of the very first episode of season 1 of Loki, I was like, oh, I'm 100% right. This is an Ouroboros. Loki is going to start the TVA, and they're going to be caught in this loop until we get to the end of this phase of Marvel. And I was wrong about all of those things. none of those are what happened, but I think what did happen was pretty amazing. I really, really enjoyed it. Not what I was expecting. Definitely kind of like paves the way for where we're going at the end of this phase of Marvel. I think that as a season finale for Loki, it's great. As a character arc for Loki, it's great. Having seen the season finale of Loki the same night that I went to go see the Marvels, I wish I was more excited about what the season finale of Loki meant for the bigger Marvel universe, because if this had happened a couple phases ago, I would go, holy shit, this is the greatest thing that's ever happened in comic books. But given that we're in this phase of Marvel,
yeah,
I think they really stuck the landing with this show, and we'll see what it means for everything else.
All right, fair enough. This is almost maybe similar for some of us to like when The Mandalorian ended and The Rise of Skywalker came out the same night or whatever, so it seemed a little bit kind of congruent with that, Mike.
It's a lot like that.
There we go. All right, Shannon McClung. This one directed by Aaron Moorhead, Justin Benson, of course, written by Eric Martin, has written the entire season. Your thoughts on this finale here from Loki season 2?
Yeah, I thought all of the theories that were posited on our show, mainly from that guy, I thought they all sounded good and they were all plausible. And yeah, what we got was not that. And it was still just as good. I mean, one of the joys of this show has been, you know, we don't really know where this is going. And I could not have predicted where it went, but it was incredibly enjoyable. And it really speaks to Tom Hiddleston's command of this character,
yeah,
through his, what, 5 films that he's popped up in, 2 series now. He is just a joy to watch as Loki, and the arc that the character has gone on since we first met him in Thor in, what, 2011? It has been one of the most interesting arcs to watch throughout the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And for those of you who have read some of the material that upcoming Avengers movies are going to be based on, it sure seems like Loki is going to be filling a particular role in one of those films.
Yeah, and maybe more, depending on if they're going to pivot with all the other stuff going on off screen. But yeah, I agree with you guys. This was incredible, jaw-dropping. I came back from a screening of Next Goal Wins at 11 o'clock at night, and I put this on. I wasn't sure if I was going to finish it, and I had to stop halfway through because there was so much going on for me that was stimulating me intellectually but also moving me emotionally that I had to be ready for what was coming, or what I sensed was coming in the back half of this of the episode. And what I thought was coming was completely different from what came, and then by the end, I was just absolutely overwhelmed. I sat in my living room for like an hour before I went to bed at 1 a.m, really kind of going over everything, reading some people's analysis of the finale, and just being caught up in the fact that this is why we love the best of Marvel, because of what it can really do and why it echoes why we love comic books. It's the best of what it can do to show us these emotional paths, these incredible journeys. People forget Loki is the foundational villain of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We talk about these heroes, Avengers, all of that stuff. You can't have it without Loki. You had to have the counter, and Loki was the one villain people always pointed to for a long time. Even though Marvel had a villain problem, Loki was the exception. And to see the arc of this character, which I kind of touched on last episode when we did our review, to see the arc go from villain to hero, frustrated villain to hero who has achieved glorious purpose, was an incredible thing to witness over the last couple of seasons here in Loki. And it's just mind-blowing. And Tom Hiddleston, who people don't give enough credit to, in my opinion, in terms of his performances and his acting, I thought nailed it, absolutely nailed it across the board in this episode. And it left you with, as Michael said, this hope or joy, or joy that you might hope that there was something bigger coming from Marvel, even though maybe it will be extinguished, we don't know. But still, it left you feeling that Marvel may still have a chance at their own glorious purpose if they can untangle their own branches down the road. We shall see. Anyway, as I said, I'm going to run down the events real quick, and then we'll talk about it all. This is an unusual finale, but I thought this was the best way to handle it. So bear with me just to remind everybody what happened. So this season finale picks up right where the previous one episode left off. Loki is back in the TVA with the knowledge of how the radiation destroys Victor Timely in the TVA. Loki hatches a new plan to get info from Obi and Casey and keep going back in time to fix the errors, and save Timely in the TVA. But none of the solutions work, so he wants Obi's knowledge. And he spends centuries getting this knowledge. We go back to certain spots from previous episodes as he seeks to get Timely out on that platform more quickly. And eventually it works. Timely successfully increases the capacity of the loom, but Timely's prototype device didn't account for infinite possibilities in the multiverse. And he laughs when he talks about this. So immediately I was like, God damn it, Vogel was right, which is something that no device can account for. But Loki figures out that he has to save He Who Remains from Sylvie. So we go back to the finale of season one, and he tries to stop Sylvie, but she will not be stopped. She is absolutely going to kill him in every possible timeline or reality that can be created there. Then He Who Remains cuts out all the nonsense, and they have a very frank discussion about things, with Majors doing some great acting here, putting away all the stumbling and the stuttering, making fun of his own stuttering as Victor Timely, and just talks. And this is the Jonathan Majors I would like to see more of if he continues going with the Kang He Who Remains situation. Loki realizes that the one thing he can do to change everything is to destroy the loom, because it's a failsafe to protect the sacred timeline and doesn't care about other branches. Somehow He Who Remains didn't plan for Loki to figure this out, or maybe he did, I don't know. Loki ultimately decides to do that because he wants his friends to live. So he heads back to the TVA, shares some last looks with his homies and with Sylvie, walks out on that platform, and step by step transforms into the Loki that we know from the comics, with full regalia and the horns and all that jazz. He destroys the loom, and it looks like he's going to kill the branches, but he instead enchants them, returns to the end of time, finally sits on his throne, creates a new timeline that he is now destined to spend the rest of time overseeing, and he has become the god of stories from the god of mischief. Loki has found his glorious purpose. Meanwhile, Mobius leaves the TVA after an emotionally quiet exchange with B-15, who has a new and improved TVA to watch over. He looks in on his true life, sees himself playing with his boys. Sylvie walks up. They have an exchange about missing Loki, but also have an unspoken understanding that he has returned their free will to them. Mobius is going to stay a while, but Sylvie's not sure what she's going to do, but at least she gets to choose her own path. And we end on a final shot of Loki and Tom Hiddleston's face, understanding that, yes, it was Loki's destiny to lose, but in losing his friends and the love of his life in Sylvie, he's also won. He went from villain to hero in the end and achieved his glorious purpose. So, Michael, the storyline of Loki in this episode, the storyline of Loki from season one into season two and ending here, what did you think about how they handled it in this particular episode?
Well, I think that, I mean, to your point, to the name of the episode, like, that line from Avengers, like, you know, I am Loki, God of Asgard, I'm burdened with glorious purpose. They have really milked that line for all that it's worth in Loki's character arc. Like, they have really made the most of it. And to watch him in this episode, first of all, it's the same thing that Tom Cruise does in Minority Report. When you do that thing where you're watching someone go over and over and over the same thing again and again, and you're watching him do the whole thing, like, you have to have a really compelling actor to make that not sort of be like, okay, I get it, let's keep going. And the way that he is just rushing everybody through, yep, all right, yeah, gonna take your job, let's keep going. Like, it's just a delight to watch him do this. But as far as his arc goes, this is the thing that I think they did the best in, like, this is what might put Loki as the best Marvel TV series above WandaVision for me. Like, this might be the thing that finally does it, because it's just such a strong finale, and the entire finale is built around him just going to different points in time to figure out what to do. And they've ultimately put Loki in a no-win situation. Like, basically, by what He Who Remains says, look, the loom is always going to blow up. Like, you, this whole thing that Victor Timely is saying is not what it is. The loom is a failsafe. It's going to delete everything. And basically, the whole deck is stacked in He Who Remains favored. Right. Like, you're either going to blow up the loom and everything turns to spaghetti, in which case I'll eventually come and pick up the pieces again or something. Or you kill Sylvie, I get to stay here, but there's no other option. Like, this is, we are all trapped on this loop, and it is my loop, and you can't do anything about it. And then, like, he goes and he has that conversation with Mobius, where he's like, let's talk, like, how do you guys decide to prune? How do you deal with it? Like, what is, and he was like, look, glorious purpose isn't glory, it's a burden.
Yeah.
He was like, it's a burden, and you just have to deal with the burden. You have to do what's right no matter what. And then he goes to Sylvie and has this really great conversation where she's like, oh, so you have to kill me? And he's like, well, what's the other option? Like, if I don't kill you, everything goes to shit. Like, right. Everything is going to collapse. The entire universe is going to collapse. And she was like, maybe. Or there's like a slim chance that something is going to work. But this is the free will that I was – like, Sylvie basically gives him the free will doesn't mean – everything works out.
Right.
Free will means maybe we die fighting, but at least it's our choice. And he ultimately takes all of that information and steps up And when he walks out on that platform, it really reminded me of one of the, my favorite moments about watching Infinity War. Like, and there's a lot of favorite moments in Infinity War. But one of my favorite moments in Infinity War is when Thor just fucking goes out in space and has the power of a star shoot through him.
Yeah.
And you know, rekindles the forges. And you're just like, oh, Marvel finally took Thor to God level. Like, this doesn't even make sense that he could survive this. Like, nothing here makes sense, but this is like God level shit. And Thor having the power of a sun shoot through him, and Loki walking out as his cape flows out and his horns form, and him grabbing all of the timelines in the multiverse and filling them with power and saying, all right, well, this is what I got to do. And sitting on a throne at the end of time, creating like the giant time tree. I'm like, well, that is some cosmic level God shit. Like, this is not a, well, that's a fun finale to that superhero show. Like, this is just God level crazy shit. And it's one of those perfect poetic endings where the thing that your character said in the very, very beginning, I think he says in Thor 2 that he deserves, it's his birthright that he deserves a throne. Yeah. And all he wants is a throne. And everyone's like, you're Loki, you're never getting this throne. And he's just self-serving and he only wants the throne for his own reasons. To get to the very end of this and he gets his throne, but it's a burden and it's not all it's cracked up to be. And it's almost something he doesn't want. But
it's not the way he wanted it. Yeah.
He's the only one who can do it.
Right.
Like, right. There was some poetry to that, and it was really, really well done and gorgeous to look at. So I really, I think they nailed that Loki arc.
Yeah. Shannon, your thoughts on how they went about taking Loki's character through the steps and beats of this particular episode, ending where he ended there at the end of time, essentially overseeing all these branches of the timeline.
I mean, to echo what Vogel said about, you said Minority Report, but I think you meant Edge of Tomorrow, right?
You know what I meant.
Okay.
Edge of Tomorrow.
I just wanted everyone to make sure that I knew the right answer.
You know what? I don't make mistakes often. It's okay that you point them out once in a while.
That's just the one I vocalized.
For our European people, Live, Die, and Repeat is the name of the title in Europe. Edge of Tomorrow here in America.
Okay. Okay.
I'm saying you want to get technical.
You're well read. There is a danger in that repetitive action of your audience getting tired. I mean, it's the same thing like with Bill Murray and Groundhog Day. If you don't have a really compelling performer, it can be like, okay, yeah. You are literally where that character is. Like, yeah, come on. But again, because Tom Hiddleston has such a command of Loki, and you see the process that as he's trying to go through it, you get, or at least I got, more and more invested. And again, the moments where he is able to pause for a second, and we get to have the conversation with He Who Remains, which was just dynamite. Again, who knows what's going to happen with Jonathan Majors and his personal issues, but watching him and Hiddleston go back and forth in that scene was just so, so enjoyable. And then the scene that he gets to when we flash back to that first episode, or the first episode of the season, season one, of the interrogation scene between him and Mobius, the moment that he has with Sylvie, where his love for this character, like, he will not kill her. Like, he is not going to do that. He will spend centuries trying to convince her otherwise, and he will fail every time. It is just so, again, it's just watching good actors act, especially when they have a command of their characters the way that everyone in this series does, especially Tom Hiddleston. Yeah. And I thought it was really, like I know some people have said, like, oh, he's basically become Yggdrasil, the Norse tree of life,
yes,
and how it kind of flips
the world tree
vertically.
Right.
The idea that he is going to have to sit there until the end of time, deciding what gets pruned and what doesn't. You actually do understand the weight that goes along with having to sit on a throne until some bad guy comes up and tries to hijack it, but. Well, we'll see.
It's a basic tenet of comic books, isn't it? From Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility. He says it to Obi in the middle of the episode, you know, how long will it take me to learn what you learn? Centuries? Oh, let's assume that I'm a quick learner and I am a god. So this whole thing that he understands what his gifts are or what his advantages are. And so what his purpose is at the end is to do something magnanimous in the end for his friends. Because his whole purpose throughout this episode is to stop this from happening, his friends from dying. But then he realizes after trying all these other things, the only way I can do it is to sacrifice myself, in essence, or my joy and my happiness. And how many people have that in their lives at certain times? You know, for this family to work, I've got to sacrifice what I want or change things that I want. But I've got to do that because the bigger picture is more important. And I think Mobius says that to him. When he was talking about his stuff with Renslayer, how he couldn't prune this 8-year-old boy, which I don't know who the 8-year-old boy is. I don't know was it his son? Was it someone else? I don't know, but he hesitated. He couldn't do it. Renslayer could, which is why she probably ends up where I think Loki was at the end of season or near the end of season one out there in that area. We see that with him. He couldn't do it. And the hesitation, and he says, because I lost sight of the bigger picture, right? Well, Loki doesn't. He eventually understands what the bigger picture is and is willing to make the sacrifice. And I don't know, the shot of him at the end is necessarily sad. It's more acceptance and an understanding, but maybe also a longing or maybe a peace that he has found his purpose. Because at the beginning of Thor, as I said last episode, he is just a guy who is desperate to be loved. He's got the middle child syndrome. He's got this feeling that, you know, the other guy is so much more good looking, so much more better. You love him more. So he's caught up in all of that. So it's a journey that he has to go through. The emotional intelligence of this episode and this season has been incredible to watch. If you've ever done any kind of therapy or done any kind of self-analysis, the emotional intelligence here to put away the insecurities and the self-esteem issues and the all that stuff that you navigate and have to deal with in life, and then understand at the end, this is the sacrifice I have to make, and I'm willing to make it, because in the end, the ends justify the means for me to do this. And I will do this because I love my friends and it's worth it to do it. It's a really powerful decision. And it was incredible to see that's the decision they made with the Loki character throughout this whole episode. And I was blown away by it. And I liked that he tried every other possible avenue. It's not a decision he wanted to necessarily make. He had to come to this decision on his own. No one told him, you've got to sacrifice yourself. He came to it on his own, and I thought there was real power in that, in him making the decision by the end to do that. So, what about the Mobius storyline? Let's kind of confront that here. We see it in this episode, Shannon. He has that scene with Loki. He's certainly wondering what Loki is doing. He tries to stop Loki. He's the one going like, this time? What does that mean, this time? And then we see this scene where he talks about, as I mentioned, not being able to prune an 8-year-old boy. And then he has this conversation near the end after everything's happened with B-15, mentioning essentially Quantumania, the Kang variant, and Earth 616. But at the end, also going to see himself and his boys. What did you think about how they handled that? And what is next for Mobius, man?
Deadpool 3.
do we think that? Because I know that had been chatted about. But I'll be curious if he shows up in Deadpool 3. I mean, if that is supposed to be this huge sort of multiversal adventure, or if it's just multiverse in terms of like they're going to the Fox universe. Again, Owen Wilson in an episode that is highly, highly focused on Loki, the moments that he does get are really, really great. I mean, you know, he was very steadfast earlier in the season talking with Brad about how, like, you know, he has no desire to go and see what his variant or rather who he's a variant of out on the timeline. He's just like, no, what if it's not so much if it's good, what if it's bad? Or no, not if it's bad, what if it's good? Like, I kind of don't want to know what I'm missing out on. And to watch him go out and see that sort of bittersweet realization of looking at the fact that, like, the house is a mess And he's like, it's, you know, it's the best house on the block. I mean, it's just really, really nice. And again, this is, even though we didn't get as much of Owen Wilson as we have earlier in the season, I think this has been a really great showcase for him. And as someone who went through their own kind of, you know, personal journey and had some valleys that he had to get through, it's great to see a performer like Owen Wilson getting a chance at this. And yeah, hopefully this isn't the end we see of Mobius. I don't know if we're going to see a Loki season 3, but first and last episodes are glorious purpose. It pretty much seems like that.
It's just going to be eight episodes of Loki sitting on that throne.
It's like, say, wow, what did I do? I really did enjoy the smaller arc that we did get of Mobius this season.
What do you think, Mikey? Do you think they handled the Mobius stuff we've got this season really well, especially in this episode, seeing him finally understanding and looking in on himself? Is he going to replace himself, as we saw Loki replacing himself when he learned how to figure out time slipping? What do you imagine is going to happen here?
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting about this is, given last week's episode, it's sort of like you have to go back to like the fourth episode to go, well, where is our Mobius on the timeline? Because the fifth episode, we went back and saw the variant of Mobius before he became Mobius.
Right.
So we got to see his backstory. So we have the information about the kids and the jet skis and everything, but our Mobius doesn't know that still. And then in this episode, we get to go see Mobius from the first episode of season 1. When he first had that conversation with Loki. So we don't really see, aside from Mobius in the time loop as Loki is trying to figure out how to keep the loom from exploding, we don't really pick up Mobius's story until the very end, until we get to that after section. Right. But as far as Owen Wilson playing Mobius, I think even though he wasn't in this episode a ton, what he got to do was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, just watching him sort of shift gears, where he's in that first episode Mobius attitude, and Loki all of a sudden is like, all right, well, now you're going to do this, and you're going to show me this thing, and I'm going to discover this, and that's, and he's like, all right, well, you got the playbook, so I don't know how you did that. But like, you know, like, he was like he just sort of shifting gears with that, and then them having this really lovely conversation where he gets to give this speech about the two timekeepers and the whole story. And to your point, John, I don't think the 8-year-old is anybody. I think the 8-year-old is just, it was an assignment. Like, you have to go prune this person. It's an 8-year-old. We already know from the fact that Mobius was obsessed with jet skis that little bits of your personality, like we talked about it with B-15 ultimately wanting to be a caregiver, like each of these people, we see that even though their memories had been wiped, there's a little bit in there somewhere. Yeah. So it makes sense that seeing an 8-year-old boy would give Mobius pause, even if he didn't know why.
Yeah.
Because he has kids. So, you know, something in the back of his mind was like, ugh, I don't like this. And it was just a really nice bit of backstory for him and Ravonna. You know, it was just like they added all of that, but it was there for a reason. And that reason was to sort of talk about the burden, the responsibility, like, you have to do this. And when Loki is like, how do you survive that burden? And he's like, scar tissue. You know, it's just like, that's like, you let it heal over and you keep going. Like, you just have to keep doing it, because a glorious purpose sounds great. A burden is not something anybody wants, but something that you need to do. And so the whole speech they had there was so powerful and such an important, to your point, John, that an important step in Loki making his own decision. Nobody's saying, hey, you have to do this. Like, Loki making that choice for himself. And then getting to the very end, you know, Shannon had said something about Loki sitting at the end of time with the Yggdrasil tree, deciding what branches to prune. But I don't know that he is doing that. I think that the whole point is that there's no branches being pruned. Like, the TVA is no longer pruning. The TVA is just looking for Kang variants. I think the whole purpose of what Loki does is he says, look, I'm going to maintain this entire thing and let the multiverse go where it goes, knowing that it's ultimately going to end in the possibility of all of this collapsing. And the TVA is now this kinder, gentler place where even, like, you know, even on the screen in the middle – at the very end, instead of the loom going this way, it's the tree going this way.
Yeah.
And nothing that they talk about at the TVA involves pruning. They're all completely aware that they're variants. They're all completely aware of what's going on. And all, like I said, all they talk about is Kang variants, and we're tracking Kang variants, and we're going to go find them all. We found this one. And so it's a kinder, gentler TVA. And now Mobius has the full option to do whatever he wants. Again, he now has free will. Everyone has free will. And with that free will, he chooses to go check things out. And I do think they leave it a little open-ended. You know, B-15 makes it really clear that he's welcome back whenever he wants. Mm-hmm. He can step right in and be in the room where it happens. And he goes and he watches what's happening, and he's taking it in, and he's taking in the beauty of it, and it looks perfect and it looks beautiful, but he never quite steps in.
Right.
He never quite steps in. And you know, it's like, I think it's him having that option. Like, he doesn't quite, you know, he says to Sylvie, what's next for you? And she's like, I don't know. But I don't know that we know with Mobius either. Like, I think that Owen Wilson's great. And again, depending on if Marvel gets their shit together or not, having a Mobius at a TVA that's maintaining things in the multiverse, if not pruning things in the multiverse, could be a great character. So if there's a need for him, I have a feeling he'll jump back off that timeline.
Yeah, and he does say, right, because he tells B-15, I want to see what we're fighting for. And when he talks to Loki, or sorry, to Sylvie, he says, if you don't look, you can't see, right? And so essentially grasping and reconnecting now that he has this free will, now that his mind is not being erased, now that he has access to all this stuff, he will be able to dial in and understand why he's doing the things that he's doing, right? And I think this is an interesting point you bring up, Mike, because there's a term that comes up sometimes that is like people joke about military intelligence. They joke about a contradictory thing, a benevolent dictator. And that's what it feels like to me. That
oxymoron.
An oxymoron. There you go. Yeah, that's what fancy words you guys have. But yeah, the thing here, what you see is that
fancy words you guys have, as in people. You fancy words that people have.
I'm just a frozen caveman. You're way too good. But no, the oxymoron. Yeah, exactly. So this idea of a benevolent dictator, right? This person who takes over the timelines, but he is infusing it with this feeling of free will, and he's going to be overwatch. He's going to watch over this stuff. He's going to be in charge. Isn't that how we see God ourselves? And so it's very interesting for people who believe in God. This idea that there is a benevolent dictator, in essence, who is someone you can plead to, someone who you hope is doing the right things for the world and has their own plans and those kinds of things. And whereas Kang was someone who misused that power, it seems like Loki is someone who's going to do something better with that power, which is why it becomes the Yggdrasil. And this is something we should, for people who don't know, it's from Norse mythology. The nine realms were said to be held together by the branches of the Yggdrasil, which is the world tree. And Loki is rewriting the multiverse. So forming the Yggdrasil in essence, hold the multiverse together is an interesting decision. And remember, this world tree or the life tree was mentioned all the way back in 2011's Thor as part of the MCU's cosmos. In the way it was described in Norse mythology, Thor tells Jane that the world tree is what holds together the cosmos in Loki season two. And that's a really interesting thing to go back and reference, because now in my mind, he has ascended past Thor, like in leaps and bounds ascended past Thor to embrace this power and embrace this moment. And I don't think it happens without Mobius. And I think that's why it's such a great character in these two seasons that Owen Wilson has brought to life, this character of Mobius. And in this particular episode, it works so well to see him be the guy that is checking in on him. And he's catching all the things that Loki is doing, where everyone else is kind of on their heels about what Loki is doing. Mobius is the one is understanding and catching. And so their exchange all the way back, as you said, Shannon, from season one, their exchange there in that room when he's initially interrogating him, and they have the back and forth about Burden and about the Renslayer situation. It's a way of reestablishing. I mean, he even stands up and shakes his hand, and Mobius does that, understanding that this Loki feels different than the Loki he thought he was. And so that later, when this Loki comes around and becomes what he becomes at the end, Mobius understands and appreciates that his friend sacrificed so that he could have this moment and he could embrace his children again in his mind and kind of look at this path that could be out there for him. So all of it just worked really well with the Mobius situation, for sure. Well, let's take a quick break, because we're at 30 minutes, and then we'll jump into a couple of the other storylines, especially Sylvie and the decision for He Who Remains. Where we go with that right after this.
Hello, Geek Buddies fans. Before we jump into today's episode, let's give a warm thank you to our sponsor, Marquee TV. Their support is why we're able to bring this podcast to you. Marquee TV isn't just any streaming service. They're your gateway to an incredible world of arts and culture.
That's right, Johnny. I've explored Marquee TV, and I've been amazed by their vast library of performances, exclusive interviews, and behind-the-scenes content. It is a treasure trove for any arts and culture lover. Right now, I'm in the middle of watching the Royal Shakespeare Company's production of The Tempest, and I've also got my eye on that Shakespeare masterclass taught by Dame Judi Dench.
Yeah, Shannon, and speaking of the RSC, I watched Christopher Eccleston's performance of Macbeth last night, and I'm going to jump into Kit Harington's performance of Henry V from the Donmar Warehouse.
Imagine having the world's most breathtaking ballets, dramatic theater productions, and magical operas at your fingertip. That's the experience Marquee TV offers, making the arts accessible wherever you are.
And we've got a special treat for our listeners. Marquee TV offers 3 months of access for just 99 cents. That's right. 3 months for only 99 cents with the code BUDDIES, B-U-D-D-I-E-S. Simply visit marquee.tv and use the promo code BUDDIES to dive into the world of arts like never before. Bring the arts home with Marquee TV. Get 3 months for just 99 cents. Visit marquee.tv to start your journey into the world of arts now. Use code BUDDIES.
Explore the extensive library of performances on Marquee TV today. And keep up with the latest in art streaming by following at Marquee TV on social media.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Yeah, I mean, can we talk about the music for a second? I mean,
it got pretty epic there at the end, man.
Natalie Holt, man.
Yeah, I mean,
Natalie Holt got to that end and she was like, guys, I'm not fucking around. I am doing this.
I think both the opening cues and the cue at the end were just supremely powerful to get you into the show. Yeah, her score has been incredible throughout the whole season. All right, let's deal with Sylvie. Mike, I go back to you. Your thoughts on the Sylvie situation here. We see her having the conversation with Loki, talking about free will, and her saying, why do you get to decide who lives and who dies? Which is essentially mirroring what he's going to eventually decide to do, is the person in charge of all the timelines so he can save them. What did you think about how the process of her in this particular episode, the fact that he can't kill her, she's going to try to kill him, and then at the end, realizes that Loki is the one who sacrificed for them to have free will. She even says it just doesn't feel the same without him. So what are your thoughts on how they handled the Sylvie storyline in this particular episode?
I mean, like I said with Mobius, I mean, I think everyone in this episode is kind of defined by how they lead Loki down his inevitable path. And Sylvie sort of represents the immovable object. Like, yeah. If He Who Remains is the unstoppable force, Sylvie's the immovable object, and Loki's stuck in the middle. Like she's very clear. She says it 90,000 times. She's like, if you want to stop me, you'll have to kill me. Right. And He Who Remains, in the whole discussion he has with Loki, he's like, look, that's your best option. He's like, I'm the benevolent he's not necessarily, but in his argument, he's right. The benevolent dictator.
Yeah.
He's like, look, every bit of happiness you've had in your life is because I've been sitting here at the end of time maintaining this timeline and I'm great. So really, if you just kill her, you get to keep all this and it's not so bad. Right. It's not so bad. Right. And that makes sense. And based on what He Who Remains said at the end of season one, it did seem like Sylvie was wrong to kill him, and that led to multiversal war. Now, what we sort of learn at the end of this episode, in this episode, is that He Who Remains, like I said, he stacked the deck. No matter what you do, he thinks he's won this whole thing. But like Sylvie is just like Shannon said, Loki's love for Sylvie, he won't kill her. So that's where he's like, he kind of gets to this point where he was like, my options are, I have no options. Like I have option A, I have option B, and I choose neither of these. So I have to change the entire equation. And then he has that conversation with Mobius, but then he goes to have that conversation with Sylvie where he stops time, showing that he's mastered all of this shit. Sidebar, I don't know that Marvel way back in the day chose green for Loki's power and green for the time stone because they knew this is where they were going. But what a hell of a coincidence that worked out well for them. Like you're like, God damn it. Like the green and the time stone and the time. You're like, you God damn it. So sidebar. But no, that conversation that he actually has with Sylvie where Sylvie's like, oh, okay, so you got to kill me. Well, not giving you my blessing. And that whole conversation where he's like, what is the other option? And she's like, I grew up in apocalypses. Like I learned my entire life that sometimes it's okay to let everything just go to shit. It's okay to destroy everything.
Yeah.
And again, I think we talked about this a few episodes ago. That's why Ragnarok as a mythological idea is going on. Like sometimes you've got to destroy everything and let it all burn to the ground to have something grow anew. And that's kind of what Sylvie reminds him of. Like he is so afraid. Like the reason that He Who Remains gets to stay where he gets to stay is because he has everybody who knows about him so afraid that without him, everything's going to collapse. The entire multiverse is going to be destroyed.
Or mind wiped, so they can't get to him.
Well, yeah, sure. But even beyond, even beyond that, like, and this is what kind of ties in directly to Secret Wars, is he basically says, without me, this whole multiversal war happens with all my variants and everything stops. We end, the entire multiverse ends, it collapses, there's no chance. Now, if you've read Secret Wars, you know that that is true. That is what happens. But then there's the slimmest chance. So what Sylvie is saying in this episode, we'll die fighting. There's that one chance. There's that tiny little thread that free will allow us to make it through this impossible thing. She's basically giving you the plot of Secret Wars. Like, that's what she's doing. And helps Loki decide that he's going to step outside of this Ouroboros and do his own thing and go down this path. So I think that's all great. And then at the end, thanks to Loki, you know, she says she's the one that gives voice to it when Loki walks off and disappears into time and they're all just like, what the fuck happened? She's like, he's giving us a chance.
He's
giving us that one chance. He's giving Marvel Studios that one chance to get it right. They got one chance and Loki got him there. Are they gonna do it? I don't know. And then at the end, she gets the ending she wants, which is, what are you going to do next?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, the happiest ending Sylvie can have, all she has wanted from day one is to live on a timeline and wake up and go, what am I going to do today? I don't know. Right. And that's where she gets to be.
To be left alone to make your own choices. And isn't that what everybody wants? Ultimately, Shannon, your thoughts on the Sylvie storyline here in this particular episode, but also like throughout the season, how they kind of constructed this thing to lead us to this moment where she finally gets, in essence, as Michael said, what she wants.
I mean, for a season that, again, she was not as heavily featured. I thought Sophia DiMartino did a great job. The steadfast resolve, even in the moment that she knows that if Loki kills her, if Loki kills her when they're with he who remains, by and large, this is going to be okay. And how she's like, no, I'm not going to give you my blessing. But I think she does think he's going to do it at that point. Like the way that he is explaining things to her. And she's just kind of like, oh, okay. So you've made this decision. You just want me to tell you it's okay.
Right.
And it's like, no, I'm not going to tell you it's okay. Because when you've lived my life and you've seen what I've grown up in and all of these worlds ending, like, you know, it is okay to destroy something if you have something to replace it with. Like, you know, you go down swinging. And I think that just really sort of speaks to her character by and large, is in a world where she has discovered everything is sort of pre-planned, she is not going to go with the flow in that scenario. Whether or not she loses or not, she would rather take the chance fighting than just kind of go quietly into the night. So I thought it was just really, really nice. And that moment at the end, again, that kind of bittersweet moment where Mobius is looking at who he was and Sylvie is deciding who she's going to be. I was like, oh, that's poetry. That's real nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And I thought it was real growth for Loki. And we've seen a lot of growth, obviously, through two seasons, but it was growth for him to go to Mobius and have the conversation and to go to Sylvie and have the conversation. As you mentioned, Shannon, it did feel like he was in essence asking for her permission. And she's like, I'm not going to give it to you. And who are you to decide who lives and dies and all this? So just putting it out on the line is, you're right, Jen. I felt like she was in Sophie DiMartino's performance. She's essentially going, okay, all right, do it. And this is a great question because I think there's symbolism here in that sometimes you have these moments in life, or some people have these moments in life where the decision is to backstab a friend or cheat on someone or hurt someone because you can get what you want. And the decision is, do you do that? Do you not do that? And these are the questions. So are you going to, in essence, take the bigger person route and not do that because the bigger picture is more important and you want to have a better life? Or are you going to sacrifice the things you love or people you love or whatever in order to achieve this thing? And in the end, will it be what you wanted because you had to do these things to get it? So I like that that's a kind of element kind of bubbling under the surface, as well as the God stuff, which I think is really powerful throughout this whole questioning the idea of that existence and what that means and the responsibilities of something like that. But yeah, I enjoyed Sylvie throughout this episode as well. I really liked the moments when she popped in. And yeah, the conversation with him and with her and Loki was so great. Sophie was, it's a little bit of a crime they didn't use her enough, but at the end of the day, I can't complain because this season was so damn good. And at the end, what she wanted was free will to make her own choices, and she got it. And I wonder where this all leads, because as we've seen in numerous projects and as we've probably seen in our own lives, once you get what you want, it's a whole nother existence. As King George said at the end of Hamilton there, said the same thing, you know, you're all alone. Now what? So yeah,
what
I love
comes
that.
Next? You see, oh, sorry.
No, I like that song. All right, let's move on to He Who Remains / Kang. Michael, your thoughts on this? As we've talked about already, the three of us in this review, Jonathan Majors, the off-camera issues. This felt like they might have possibly last minute adjusted this ending. And I may be wrong. I'm probably wrong. Adjusted this ending to move away from Kang. We hear at the end, you know, the Kang variants. So Loki is probably going to help these people find the Kang variants of the TVA. We hear about the 616, which is the Quantumania Kang. So what is the next step here? Because clearly Loki outsmarted him by doing something that He Who Remains did not anticipate, we think. So what's your thoughts on how they handled Kang and He Who Remains in this particular episode, and then what's coming next for him?
Well, I don't think they made any adjustments.
Okay.
I think this is always how I was going to... Like, basically, just to... Like, what He Who Remains has done with the loom and it having the failsafe and Sophie and the whole, like, thing. Like, it kind of... Like, I keep saying, he stacked the deck. Like, in his world, if Sophie kills him, he comes back. If Sophie doesn't kill him, he stays around. Mm-hmm. He has maintained that all those variants of him are out there, but they're going to get pruned and he's going to keep everything under control. And this is the Ouroboros. Like, this is that giant ring that we saw around the sacred timeline is his Ouroboros.
Yeah.
What Loki has done is finally opened up to that multiversal war. If you think about the Marvel timeline and the way that they've sort of established it, everything that happens in Loki season 1 and 2 happens kind of before everything that's happened in phase 4 or 5 so far. Mm-hmm. So like No Way Home, Quantumania, the Quantumania post-credit sequence, the Council of Kangs, that's all what has happened because of what Loki did.
Right.
So by Loki stepping outside of that Ouroboros and saying, we are not going to prune anything, we're going to let it go, that's what leads to a arena full of Jonathan Majors all screaming at each other and them all doing what they do. Like, that's where we kind of are now. Yeah. And so I don't think that they've made their adjustments yet. Like, that is to come.
Okay.
How they do that, I don't know. I mean, we've talked about this on our main show. I think that in a Marvel being in a space that they're currently in where everything is already very unsatisfying to a large portion of their fans, setting everything up for Kang for a phase and a half and then saying, nope, we're going to change it for the last phase and a half, I think is not going to serve them well. If Jonathan Majors has to go, Jonathan Majors has to go. That's just a fact. But I think I think they would be making a mistake to veer off the Kang track. Now, look, as we all said, Jonathan Majors is great. Yeah. And it would be a shame. But if that's what it is, that's what it is. But as far as what happens, as Shannon said, watching him and Tom Hiddleston go back and forth in this episode was a joy.
Yeah.
He is great at... As we said at the end of season 1, the fact that him sitting there just sort of expositing about the multiverse is as fun to watch as it is a testament to his performance. It's great. And then as far as like within the world of the MCU where it goes, it's like I said, we have now opened it up. I don't think that Loki is helping them find Kang variants. I think Loki has stepped outside of a help out. Like, he is existing. Like, he has stepped outside of time, away from all his friends. He's not dealing with them anymore. He is just sitting at the end of time, holding on to that time, all the multiverse, and just letting it do its thing. But the TVA is out hunting Kangs.
Right.
So, like, if we were to see a, I wouldn't even call it a season 3 of Loki, and I don't think we're going to get this because I think we're going to get to the end of the multiverse saga before this all happens. But if we were to see a TVA series on Disney Plus, it would be them running around trying to find a bunch of Jonathan Majors on the timeline and prevent them from becoming Kangs.
You know what's a great movie? Kevin Feige figuring out how to time slip and going back and redoing
By the way, if you just want to keep track, like, we got to the end of She-Hulk and Kevin Feige was a giant robot.
Yeah.
But really, as Loki sat at the end of time grabbing the multiverse and sitting there and being like, I'm going to hold on to this, I was like, so Loki turned into Kevin Feige? That's where we ended.
Shannon, what did you think of the Kang stuff here, or it's Kang, sorry, He Who Remains stuff here in this particular episode and like throughout the season, and where do we go from here with his variants?
Well, I mean, I like the way that Vogel put it when he said, if Sylvie kills him, he comes back. If she doesn't, he remains. It made me think of the post-credit sequence of Quantumania, and I think it's Immortus who says it, but how he says they're beginning to touch the multiverse. Like, Loki is literally hanging on to it. Jonathan Majors, again, for whatever happens with his personal issues, you know, the guy is a really good actor. And that, again, that scene between him and Loki, kind of when he's just like, aha, okay, so how many times have we done this? And when Loki freezes time and he's like, yeah, how many times have we done this? Like, you see the progress that Loki has made and how he's made progress to the point that He Who Remains didn't anticipate it.
Yeah.
And when he's just like, I told you you were my favorite. Like, let's have a seat. Let's chat. The finale of Loki season one, the whole He Who Remains sequence, that's something I've gone back and watched many, 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 many times. And I imagine this finale, particularly that scene, I will go back and watch many, many, many times. And not so much out of trying to figure out where they're going to go, what's going to happen, but just enjoying watching these two skilled performers just go back and forth. And I think that kind of speaks to sort of, you know, the unevenness that we've seen in Phase 4 and 5, how we can get something like this. And then some of the other offerings haven't quite reached this level, and it's as an audience member, it can be a little frustrating. But you know, there's a lot of good actors out there, and if they have to replace Jonathan Majors, they have to replace Jonathan Majors. They're like, is he talented? 100%. He ain't the only one. But what we got from him in this episode was just so good. And I thought they really, I didn't think we would see He Who Remains again. I thought, like, okay, he's kind of gone. We're just going to be focusing on Victor Timely. But the fact that we did get a little reprise of his performance and that scene, I thought was just awesome.
Yeah, agreed. You know, again, whatever happens is going to happen. But his performance, looking at it just from that narrow window, the back and forth with them was fantastic. And this is a Jonathan Majors we rarely see in anything, which is kind of all the walls down, all the performance stuff down, and just straight up talking. I was just like, man, where is this? Where can I see this Jonathan Majors? Because this is just as electric as these other characterizations he puts on as an actor in all these different films and in the different variants we've seen so far of He Who Remains. So yeah, I mean, great stuff here. I liked the decision. I do have questions about how he wouldn't have figured out Loki might do this. So I wonder if they're going to address that as these other feature films come out or TV shows come out in that way. So I have questions here about where we're going to go. But as you said, Michael, clearing up a little bit, all these Kang variants now are out there because of what Loki did. So how is that going to bleed into the MCU overall? How much of a hand is Loki going to play in this down the road? Because they've set him up to possibly be involved in certain storylines, to affect certain storylines. We'll see, or not. Maybe he's a person who stays out of it, right? What do we do when we pray to God? We're always like, can't you intervene? But God is omniscient and omnipotent, at least the way that I've been trained to believe in God. So does he interfere? Does he not interfere? It's going to be an interesting question going forward.
Well, and in the comics, I mean, the way that Kang has become like a major villain for the Avengers is exactly what you're talking about. Like at the end of season one, it sounded like, oh, if you like, you know, like if you do this, the multiversal war happens. But then you get to the end of season two and you're like, oh, not really. I mean, he kind of already had this, you know, it was like, so Loki stepping out now feels like that's the case. But He Who Remains is the one who remained from the multiversal war in the first place.
Right.
So is there, does he still have fail safes down the line? Like, we'll see. Like, I don't know. But yeah, so you never quite know with Kang. I mean, that's the way that Kang has been played in Marvel Comics for decades at this point.
Yeah. I do want to ask you guys kind of wrap up the review here a little bit. Shannon, I'm going to go to you first. Any criticisms here of this? Because, I mean, we were presented this unholy alliance between Miss Minutes and Renslayer, and it never really fully comes into motion or fruition, rather, as we go into the finale. Renslayer is essentially sent out to where Loki was when he was pruned in the last season, there with Richard E. Grant and all the people out there. And Miss Minutes is only has like a cameo in this episode when Loki comes in after he's going back further back in time to try to get Timely out on that platform. And quickly says, Miss Minutes, can you help us build the throughput multiplier, blah, blah, blah. Well, we don't really see much of that. And also B-15 and Brad just kind of disappear. B-15 is there, but there's not really anything to explore. Like, we saw her life as a doctor, but we don't go even further into that. So do you feel that, and Casey as well, and OB as well, we don't really get any kind of closing of the loop on any of these characters. So is there any criticism on your end that you feel the show maybe didn't 100% get there with this finale?
I mean, I think there's always more that we would like to see from characters. Like, it does seem like for the majority of the season, B-15 did get a little sidelined. You know, Brad, the character, like, we're introduced to him early. We really liked him. As you said, he just kind of, you know, vanish from the final equation. But at the end of the day, I feel like you do get these subplots that feel unnecessary as it relates to your main story. And there's a reason those get cut. Is because if it feels
pruned,
like,
shall we say. Yeah.
Yeah. If it feels like it's dragging it down, then that is why they get rid of it. Would I like to have seen more from Kiwi Kwan? Of course. But as it was given to us, I'm kind of like, would it have been nice to have seen more of them? Yes. Is there an organic way to make them more involved in the finale? Not from what I could see. So it's one of those situations, like, maybe we'll see these characters again, maybe we won't. What we got of them, I was really happy with.
What about you, Michael? Do you feel storyline-wise, they presented something here but didn't quite follow through on it? And why no final shot of Brad either in prison or maybe reformed working for the TVA? Because he was such a strong character in the first four episodes. What'd you think about this?
Yeah, I think seeing Brad in that final little after section would have been nice. I think that that was probably a mistake on their part. Just like, let's just, he was such a big part of the storyline of the first half of the season that just like having him still be present kind of makes sense. But aside from that, look, I like all these characters and I would have liked to have seen more of all of them. But I think given the storylines that we got and where we ended, we kind of got there. I mean, like, we know that Casey has now stepped up and is kind of a major player in the TVA. Right. B-15 is running the TVA. We know where Ravonna Renslayer is, to be continued. The OB and Casey have rebuilt Miss Minutes. Is that a good idea or not? I don't know. I'm with B-15. She's like, is she going to try and kill us? And they're like, like, maybe don't remake the Killer Clock, except for the bigger MCU. More Tara Strong is better, and I would love to see Miss Minutes continue. So I'm glad they rebuilt her. So I do think that little section at the end, that little epilogue, kind of did give you a very nice wrap-up. Like, even B-15 going into that room, the judge's chambers, and seeing that it's not just one or two people making all the decisions, that it's this hustle-bustle of the TVA where everybody is working together with a common purpose, and that common purpose is to keep an eye out for these Kang variants because they now know. It's everything that Mobius says to B-15 about the, you know, people who forget their history are doomed to, you know, like they were their minds were wiped. They were doomed to repeat that timeline and live on that Ouroboros because they didn't know any better. And now they know better and they're making better decisions thanks to Loki. So yes, absolutely. You know, give me a 13 episode Loki season and expand out on these characters. But for a 6-episode season, I think that as opposed to other series where you do really feel like, wow, they really dropped the ball. Aside from maybe like a little coda on Brad, I think that everybody got, even OB kind of like getting to write the second edition of the TVA handbook after knowing that he was kind of a failed author. You know, like, so even though it wasn't a ton, they did kind of let us at the end go, here's where this person is. Here's where this person is. Yeah. Here's where this person got to end up. Here's where they're like, so you got that little bit of satisfaction. So I think they did a nice job with that, even though, when you love characters, you always want to know more.
Yeah, I agree. I think there are, you can lob some kind of a couple of criticisms to the ending here. I agree. Last shot of Brad. I think we should have seen something with Brad at the end there, and maybe something more with B-15. But her walking into essentially what looks like a Congress of the TVA. Yeah. So it's going to be a much more democratic approach to things. Judge Gamble, who showed her empathy throughout the season when they've had their interactions, she's a good person to be in charge with her as opposed to General Docs. So that's going to make you feel like this is going to be a better TVA going forward. Yeah, and then Obi and Casey. And yes, I mean, and I don't know if anybody noticed, but it looked like the books, instead of being orange, the new ones are yellow. Yeah,
they're yellow.
So, yeah, so a lighter color.
What does that mean? It's Sinestro's behind the TVA, Sinestro, man. It's crazy. Yeah. Wait, what?
but also, those are the colors of Loki, white, green, and yellow. So maybe there's a little bit of an influence there as well. But yes, good point about him being an author, opening these books, and maybe having that little piece of him satisfied in that way. Sure, and Casey being more of a part of it for sure. So I love that. All right, well, let's wrap up. Shannon, any final words on this episode or anything you want to highlight that we missed, and overall thoughts on the season?
I mean, in the mixed bag that has been the MCU since Endgame, I think Loki's season one and season two have been a real treat. And like from the folks that I've spoken to, a lot of people haven't gotten on to season two. It's just kind of like, is that still going? Is it any good? And I'm like, so far, yeah, wow, it's pretty good. And so yeah, now having reached the conclusion, like, you know, you always try to judge a series by the series in its totality. Now I feel confidently to be like, yeah, absolutely, you should go watch this show. It's quite good.
Okay. Michael, any final thoughts on this episode and the season overall?
Yeah, look, it's what I said before. Like, it was a really interesting thing to go see the Marvels and watch the Loki finale on the same night, because I think that you sort of just, we've talked a ton on the show, and everybody talks about it, and Variety writes articles about it, and it's literally what's, you know, Marvel not being what it was, Marvel being off base, what's Marvel doing wrong? And I think that what Marvel's doing wrong at the end of the day is that you don't feel like everything is moving towards the same spot. Like you, right, like there was a moment where in early Marvel where a post-credit sequence would happen and you would go, well, that's going to be super important. And now you've sort of lost that because there's so many different things going on and there's so many threads that you're, and you know, they've sort of dropped the ball on so many things. You're like, is that important? So getting to the end of Loki season two, it's like I said, they stuck the landing great here. It's Shannon's right. In the mixed bag that is the multiverse saga, Loki season two is, to me, one of the highlights.
Yeah.
And getting Loki to where you got Loki at the end is great. I just wish I was more excited about it in the bigger picture of Marvel. As far as the series, they did great. Like Loki season one and season two, I think when we get to the end of this phase of Marvel and it moves on to whatever, like we'll go back and we'll be like, here's like the little gems in this mess that you should check out. And this will absolutely be one of them. Maybe I'll be proven wrong. Maybe we'll get to, Kang Dynasty and Secret Wars, and Loki sitting on his throne, holding on to that giant tree of the multiverse will be like a big piece of it, and I will cheer. So we'll see. But as far as this, very, very happy.
Yeah, and we'll see too, because I mean, there's a big announcement that all these Marvel movies are being pushed back as we're recording this. The announcement that was yesterday released, all these Marvel. So maybe they're readjusting. Captain America 4 being reshot, some scenes being reshot because of some low test scores. So clearly there's stuff to fix. And as Michael said, there is a legitimate place to be concerned about such a great season of Marvel television fumbled by other people who might use elements or characters from this season to weave into the overall story of the MCU as we go forward. So there is a fear of that. But you have to look at these things sometimes in a little bit of a vacuum. And this particular season, and honestly, season one, which I have said from the beginning, is my favorite season of Marvel television so far. These two, in combination, number one of all the Marvel TV shows, in my opinion, because of not only the intellectual, philosophical stuff that they explore and challenge you with, but also because of the real human connections of these characters. And that came through so strongly throughout this entire episode. And yes, a few of the characters were a little bit sidelined in this particular episode, but we got connection with them. We touched base with them. They were concerned when Loki walks out by himself. They're all freaking out because they care about him. And how many, I mean, who could have conceived that there would be so many people that would care about Loki? And in the end, he's doing what he's doing because of his love for his friends. What growth. And so to see that as your main character, see that storyline as your main character, an emotional storyline for your main character, I thought was just genius. The direction here from Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead throughout, whenever they've directed episodes, has been fantastic. Eric Martin's writing has been exceptional. They should get Eric on just about everything to write here to really give stuff more depth and still explore the humor, still explore the comic book stuff that we enjoy, but also have some real complexity to the stuff he's creating here in the Marvel Universe. You'd love to see more of it. And look, this to me is like kind of Andor a little bit. People are like, well, you know, it doesn't have to, you know, you put the little mustaches on and the beret. It doesn't have to be all that. But the fact that this does exist is a good thing, and it can be balanced out by other things. Yeah, it's a
why do we have a beret?
It's a reference to something from that someone posted, some influencer posted on their Twitter. But this whole idea, this is the thing that I enjoy, is that we can have the balance, right? The Marvels is frivolous fun for the people can enjoy it. It teases heavier stuff that it nowhere near accomplishes or brings to fruition. This does. And I hope there's more of this combined with better stuff with the Marvel's point of view down the road for Marvel, and hopefully them pushing everything back is their way of trying to fix everything to make it better. So
I will say, so like one of the keys to like a great character, I do this a lot with Marvel sometimes. Yeah. I'll go on Disney Plus, like when I have like some downtime, like you sort of like can choose your own adventure. Like you can go on like an Iron Man journey and you can watch like Iron Man 1, Iron Man 2, Avengers, Iron Man 3. Yeah. Like you can just, and just ignore everything else. You can do Cap. Like I did Spidey recently where I just did like Civil War, Homecoming, Infinity War, Endgame, Far From Home, No Way Home. And with Loki, this is like a sign, as Shannon said, like the arc of this character. Like you can just do a Loki run now. And you can watch Thor 1, Thor 2, Avengers, Ragnarok, Infinity War, and then just ride through Loki season 1 and 2. And the arc of where he is in Thor 1 to where he's sitting at the end of Loki season 2 – and just watching Tom Hiddleston go on that journey, like that's a great ride. And that will always be a great ride no matter what else happens with the MCU.
That's a good point. I also said that last episode, but okay. Shannon only said it. Right. So anyway, let's move on. That's it. That's it. That's the end of this particular spoiler review.
Oxymoron.
You know what? I got your oxymoron right here. Thank you all so much for watching or listening to us here on the Geek Buddies. We appreciate it, Madly. And thank you for all of you who've come on this spoiler review journey with us through season 2 of Loki. We really appreciate it. And don't forget, here's an announcement. We're going to do a live Marvel's review Monday night, 5:30 p.m. PT is the tentative scheduled time. Monday night, 5:30 p.m. PT.
Y'all pour yourself a drink for that one. It's going to be a wild ride.
It'll absolutely be a wild ride. All right, Shannon, what do we have to tell them?
Yeah, if you'd like to follow us on social media, on Twitter, it's @geek_buddies. On Instagram, @the_geek_buddies. If you'd like to follow me on social media, on Twitter, it's @Shannon_McClung. On Instagram, it's @ShannonTheGeekBuddy. If you'd like to get to the edge of tomorrow, you can follow Michael Vogel @MKToon. If you would like the definitions of more multisyllabic words like oxymoron, you can follow John Rocha @TheRochaSays.
Yeah, I just don't know every English language. All right, Michael, what do we have to say? Your ways are foreign.
If you would like to insert Minority Report joke about my minority little friend Shannon McClung here, then you can just keep on keeping on with the Geek Buddies. Go ahead and smash that like button below. Subscribe to Johnny's Outlaw Nation page. Leave your comments below. What did you think of this season of Loki? What do you think about how it ties into the bigger storyline of the multiverse saga? What do you think about all things Marvel? Let us know in the comments below. If you're listening to us on a podcast, go ahead and leave us some stars and some comments so we go up in the rankings and more people can find us. And as always, the best thing that you can do is retweet this video, post it on your socials, send it to your friends, and tell them to hang out with your buddies, the Geek Buddies.
There you go. All right. Thank you all so much. Don't forget, we're also going to have our Geek Buddies main show coming up as well for you all to enjoy. So, there you go. Thanks, everybody. And we'll talk to you next time. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next time with another brand new episode of the
Geek Buddies! Hey! We'll be right back.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to Season 1, we are thrilled to announce the launch of Season 2. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make Season 2 even more memorable together.